from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I'd like to thank everybody who showed up in Miami, and Detroit, Michigan this week for my book readings and signings. And my apologies to the people who showed up here in Santa Monica. It had to be postponed for sad family reasons, but it will be rescheduled. But thank you all for showing up. And a reminder that my effort at Celebrity Jeopardy airs this Tuesday, November 14th, in most parts of the country that have electricity. So if you care, that's your chance. And if you don't, it's not. Ladies and gentlemen, the Rupert Watch continues. Media mogul Rupert Murdoch in Australia says he has no regrets about supporting the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, arguing that the U.S. death toll in the conflict is, and this is his word, minute from a historical perspective. That's Rupert, ladies and gentlemen, telling you that John Kerry, not to defend him. You know I'm the last person on the planet to defend John Kerry. John Kerry gets climbed all over for screwing up a joke that he should never have told. Because aren't we through with the Bush is stupid jokes? And then aren't we through with screwing them up? But here's Rupert Murdoch saying flat out, hey, the death toll is minute. What's your problem? Talking like the Geico Gecko there for a moment, but minute. From a historical perspective, the death toll, certainly of Americans there, by the terms of any previous war, are quite minute. Oh, sorry, this isn't in Australia. This is in Tokyo, even farther away, in a country where they don't even speak English. So why would anybody climb on his back about it? Of course, he continues, no one likes any death toll. But the war now, at the moment, is certainly trying to prevent a civil war and to prevent Iraqis killing each other. At the moment. In the earlier moments, it was starting that all up, wasn't it? Roop, I believe it was right to go in there. I believe that certainly the execution that has followed has included many mistakes. But that's easy to say after the event. It's much easier to criticize the conduct of the war today in the media than it was in previous wars. I'm sure there were great mistakes made in the past, too. He's also had a change of heart on global warming. Never too late, babe. Never too late. And, ladies and gentlemen, Sunday morning yak shows, White House, is he chief of staff? I think he is. Josh, don't call me John, Bolton, don't spell it with an O, it's with an E, did 4/5 of the full Greenberg. Greenberg, right? That was Monica Lewinsky's attorney who did all 5 Sunday yak shows in one day, setting the standard, setting the bar high. I think Josh Bolton did 4 or 5. And on one of them, I think talking to George Stephanopoulos, he said, apropos of what's going to have to be done with the Iraq situation and the prevalent talk, ladies and gentlemen, that the Iraq study group, not to be confused with the Iraq survey group, those were the people who found no WMDs. The study group is going to find, why don't we get out of there? The one chaired by James Baker and Lee Hamilton. Lee Hamilton, I guess, is the guy you call for any commission that's really tackling a trouble. You know, he did the 9/11 commission. Now he's on the how do we get out of, what the hell do we do in Iraq commission? Maybe he should be named to the can Fox ever find a half-hour hit comedy show commission? Anyway, Josh, don't call me John Bolton, is talking to George Stephanopoulos about the prevalent rumors that the Baker-Hamilton Commission, the Iraq Study Group, is going to recommend that one of the things we need to do to extricate ourselves is to talk to the Iranians and the Syrians and try to do something with them. And Bolton's response to that was, well, the Iranians and the Syrians have been meddling in Iraq. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I recommend you look at a map. I believe the Russians at the time of the Contra thing in Nicaragua, the Soviets, excuse me, were heard to say that the Americans were meddling in Nicaragua, at which point we said, oh, excuse me, it's our neighborhood, and then funded the Contras and overthrew the government because it's our neighborhood. So how many thousand miles away from Iraq? But we belong there. But the Iranians and the Syrians, nasty as they may be, I believe a quick look at the Lachaud map indicates, yes, they are right next door. And they're meddling. Hello. The road to bipartisanship looks smooth indeed. On the other hand, I watched Nancy Pelosi this week at her first I'm in Control press conference, her first Hagian moment. And, you know, that one sentence, it's going to be part of the Democrats' agenda to take the up to now hollow promises that President Bush made at Jackson Square in New Orleans when the city was underwater and make them real. That sentence was the one she didn't say. So maybe there'll be reason to make fun even under the new regime. What do you think? Hello, welcome to the show.
Long. Ooh. have to part. We'll be together again. Your kiss, your smile, our memories I'll treasure forever. So try thinking with your heart. We'll be together again. Times when I know you'll be lonesome, times when I know you'll be sad. Don't let temptation surround you. Don't let the blues make you bad. Someday, some way, we both have a lifetime before us. For a parting is not goodbye. We'll be together again.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And ladies and gentlemen, F is for FEMA, the least corrupt state in the United States, New Hampshire. According to a new study, two West Virginia University professors crunched federal statistics on the number of corruption-related convictions for the 1990s, found New Hampshire had the fewest. But they don't ascribe that to honest people or transparent governments. Their theory, according to the Concord Monitor in New Hampshire, which reported this, it's the weather, or more precisely, FEMA's response to it. The study by economics professors Peter Leeson and Russell Sobel argues that the more federal disaster relief a state gets, the more corrupt its officials will be. Distribution of disaster relief tends to be chaotic. No, giving crooked officials the chance to siphon money or take bribes, they say. Louisiana received the dubious distinction of the most corrupt state. Why would that be? Dateline Honolulu, the top regional FEMA official said this past Thursday, the agency deserves a perfect score for its response to Hawaii's recent earthquake, even though relief workers didn't arrive until the crisis had passed. Well, that's perfect. Perfectly in keeping. Quite frankly, I'm going to give us a 10, says Nancy Ward, director of FEMA's Region 9, who flew to Hawaii this week to survey the damage of an event that happened, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? Timing, babe. The agency has only three permanent staff members based in Hawaii, and by the time a plane load of 100 FEMA-led government experts reached the Big Island 52 hours after the quake, electricity and airport capacity had been restored. Job well. Hey, mission accomplished. We did an excellent job being able to balance what we did and didn't know at the time we started mobilizing and erring on the side of being safe rather than sorry, Ward said. Are those the job descriptions of the Emergency Management Agency? I guess it is. I guess they are. Because of Hawaii's remote location, the state can't expect to receive emergency relief any faster than it did. And the only way FEMA could have done better would have been to have more employees stationed in Hawaii full-time, she said. She also said emergency workers have learned to act with an abundance of caution since Katrina last year. Is that what they learned? See, that's why I'm not a teacher. Still, on the subject of the fine follow-ups at FEMA, poor storage and exposure to storms and floods have lost FEMA between $3 and $4 million in modular homes, according to the Homeland Security Department's Inspector General. Hey, let's get rid of that Inspector General because he's fine and bad stuff. FEMA stored almost 1,800 modular homes it purchased after Katrina in Texarkana, Texas, IG Richard Skinner says, but they were all left exposed to the elements, and almost one-third of those homes were at least partially damaged because their packaging was not weather-resistant. About 110 homes were damaged beyond repair. We'll be shipping those to New Orleans? No, we won't. Inspectors had warned FEMA previously to monitor the sites in Texarkana as well as Hope, Arkansas, to prevent the kind of deterioration that happened. FEMA ignored that recommendation. Tarps that once protected the homes were reduced to tattered remnants by rain and heat. Framing and wood portions of some homes are warped and unsalvageable. Cardboard boxes containing toilets and other components have deteriorated, and some of those components are jumbled. Ooh, jumbled toilet components. FEMA said it may send some of the homes to Guam. Aren't you guys glad you're part of this? But the IG warned that FEMA should not try to recycle any unusable homes. Let's send the jumbled toilet components to Guam. At least they'll appreciate them. FEMA, ladies and gentlemen, it keeps making you proud. And now, news from outside the bubble. On the subject of corruption, congressional scandals have damaged America's standing on a global list that ranks freedom from corruption. The United States ranked 20th least corrupt among 163 countries, down from 17th last year. According to the Transparency International Corruption Perception Index, 2006. Finland, Iceland, and New Zealand tied for least corrupt, each with an almost perfect ranking. And in more bad news for the United States, next to last on the list was Iraq, exporting what we do best. Almost three-quarters of the country surveyed scored below 5 points, which means the majority of those judging them detect corruption. Rampant corruption is said to be apparent in 71 countries. Haiti was at the bottom, and Iraq placed just above. Other news outside the bubble, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak has warned that hanging Saddam Hussein will lead to even more bloodshed in Iraq. These are the first comments, public comments on the sentence by an Arab leader. Carrying out this verdict will explode violence like waterfalls in Iraq, Mubarak is quoted as saying by Egyptian state-run newspapers. It will transform Iraq, he says, into pools of blood and lead to a deepening of the sectarian and ethnic conflicts, he said. And furthermore, the scale of violence in Iraq shows no sign of abating, and the country may slide into all-out civil war, a leading British security firm has warned in a special report. The company Pilgrims employs a large number of former British military personnel. Part of the problem, says Pilgrims, is that the U.S.-British coalition forces had in the past systematically understated the extent of the resistance they were facing. Washington has chosen to emphasize the role played by foreign elements in the insurgency. The report says this has allowed Washington to portray the insurgency as a magnet for al-Qaeda supporters rather than an Iraqi-led phenomenon which might undermine U.S. claims of local approval for the reconstruction project. Pilgrims envisages a steady unraveling of the situation. In the absence of any credible leadership, the various centrifugal elements will continue to pursue their own agenda, rendering unlikely the possibility of finding a single national approach to the Iraq problem, it says. While stressing that Iraq has not yet slipped into civil war, the report says it is being kept at bay only through the efforts of religious leaders. I think they mean Iraqi religious leaders. I don't think they mean Ted Haggard. Says Mark White, the director of the think tank, going by the number of attacks being carried out, there's no evidence that the security situation is getting better. And one more item of news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, sort of merges into another area, but here we go. From the Daily Times of Pakistan, Pakistan is willing to fence off its border with Afghanistan, Foreign Minister Kasturi says, a day after his Dutch counterpart called for greater international pressure on Pakistan to stop militants from infiltrating Afghanistan. He renewed the offer in talks with his Dutch counterpart, the foreign minister of the Netherlands, Bernard Bot. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. But there's more about Pakistan. The Washington Post says 2 months ago, General Pervez Musharraf, triumphantly announced that peace pact with Islamic extremists in the North Waziristan tribal district near Afghanistan, saying it would become a model for curbing domestic Islamic militancy and cross-border attacks. Today, says the Post, that model lies in shreds. Northwestern Pakistan's fragile political peace has been shattered by two devastating attacks, a government missile strike that killed 82 people at a school, and a retaliatory suicide bombing this week that killed 42 Army recruits. The school, according to U.S. intelligence reports, was being used as a training site for insurgents. Now, officials are predicting a new wave of violence as anti-government anger spreads and religious extremists call for holy war against the Pakistani military and Western forces fighting in Afghanistan, says a senior military official in the northwestern provincial capital of Peshawar, Pakistan. Quote, "This is a disaster. We all recognize the gravity of the situation. It's a nightmare to have an army being attacked on its own soil by its own people. After the two incidents, the doors to peaceful negotiated settlements are closed. I am afraid we are on a war course in the tribal areas." More about Pakistan. According to the Christian Science Monitor, quoting a leader of a group of Taliban fighters in Balochistan, Pakistan, who trot across to make some mischief in Afghanistan. Quote, 2 years ago, we only attacked Afghan officials, but now we have so many Talibs that we can attack Americans. In a rare interview with a Western reporter, four Taliban fighters describe how they slip into Afghanistan, attack NATO and Afghan forces, and then return to Pakistan to rest. Isn't that nice? Pakistan's a pillow for the Taliban. "Everybody in the neighborhood knows we are Talibs," says a 19-year-old fighter with a blue-white block-printed turban. "Pakistan is a little bit free for us." And a little bit rock and roll. The Times of London tells us about Afghanistan. "Everywhere we've gone downhill here," says the head of the UN assistance mission in Kandahar. "We've never improved the situation," he says. "The security issue isn't just to do with the Taliban. It's to do with bad, weak government. 50% of this problem is internal." This is a UN assistance director speaking. People don't naturally want the Taliban back, not at all, but they increasingly think the government offers them nothing but insecurity, and that though the Taliban offer them nothing either, they may perhaps give them some stability and an end to corruption, unquote. Sounds like Iraq, but it's Afghanistan. Pakistan says the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, bears a strong degree of responsibility in the resurrection of the Taliban, but the Kabul government carries equal blame, dithering and inefficient. Its corruption is legendary, although they didn't make the top two, and the country's leadership is riven with drug lords and profiteers. And there's something wrong with that? That sounds good to me. You got the money, and you got the drugs. Efforts to create a police force have produced an organization regarded as predatory and cruel. Sounds like Iraq. Okay. That's Afghanistan for us. And Iraq? Savage new warlords are battling for power, and the country is starting to splinter, says the British conservative newspaper The Telegraph. Less than 6 months after America's airstrike ended Zarqawi's campaign of Sunni terror, an equally brutal fanatic has emerged on the Shiite side of the religious divide. But, you know, Bill O'Reilly, I think, summed it up for the thinking Americans this week when he said, I don't want to hear any more about Shiites and Sunnis. Never again. I don't want to hear another word about them. In the past year, says The Telegraph, the new Shia Zarqawi, who is known as, what's his name, Abu Dara, say it. His trademark method of killing is a drill through the skull. In the past year, he and his followers are thought to have murdered thousands of Sunnis, their victims' bodies symbolically dumped in road craters left by al-Qaeda car bombs. So I say close the hardware stores. You do that, they cannot get the drills, ladies and gentlemen. Think it through. And Marine General Peter Pace, who is a bigwig in Washington, asked by one interviewer whether the United States is winning the war in Iraq, Pace replied with nary a nod to Bill Clinton, quote, you have to define winning. I don't mean to be glib about that. Winning to me is simply, now listen to this definition, ladies and gentlemen, because it might be news to you. General Peter Pace, Joint Chiefs, quote, winning to me is simply having each of the nations that we're trying to help have a secure environment inside of which their government and people can function, unquote. Did you hear the word democracy in that sentence? Having each of the nations that we're trying to help have a secure environment inside of which each their government and people can function, unquote. George W. Bush told us that security was the obsession of the former foreign policy of this country, and it only led to trouble. Now, according to General Pace, it's our much-sought goal. And he continues, and again, ladies and gentlemen, I'm the last person on the planet to defend John Kerry. But you may remember what a storm he ignited when he told, I believe it was the New York Times Magazine, that in his campaign for the presidency, that he wanted, his goal was to reduce terrorism to the status of a nuisance. And the Republicans climbed all over him for that. Here's General Peter Pace, who works, I believe, for a Republican president. Quote, you're not going to do away with terrorism, but you can provide governments in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere with enough security capacity to keep the acts below a level at which their governments can function. Sounds like nuisance level to me. Doesn't it sound like that to you?
Your day breaks, your mind aches. You find that all her words of kindness linger on when she no longer needs you. She wakes up, she makes up. She takes her time and doesn't feel she has to hurry. She no longer needs you. And in her eyes you see nothing. No sign of love behind the tears cried for no one. A love that should have lasted years. You want her, you need her. And yet you don't believe her when she says her love is dead. You think she needs you. And in her eyes you see nothing. No sign of love behind the tears cried for no one. A love that should have lasted years. You stay home, she goes out. She says that long ago she knew someone, but now he's gone, she doesn't need him. Your day breaks, your mind aches. There will be times when all the things she said will fill your head. You won't forget her. And in her eyes you see nothing. No sign of love behind the tears cried for no one. A love that should have lasted years.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
And we got a bunch of them. So sit back, relax, strap in. Pick up your apologies of the week mug somewhere. I don't have them. BBC Radio 1 afternoon host Edith Bowman issued an apology this week for reading an email on the air that included a racial slur. Bowman, discussing slang, read a listener's email saying, "When the weather is a little bit cold, we say that it's a bit Pearl Harbor, meaning that there's a nasty nip in the air." Unquote. A half hour later, Bowman read a formal apology on the air. The BBC said it received dozens of complaints and issued a statement that said Bowman had read this particular term out in error. No offense was intended, and Edith apologized on air for any that may have been caused. The World Health Organization has apologized to the Chinese government. That's right, who is on second in the apologies of the week this week? The World Health Organization has apologized after bird flu samples provided by China were misused by foreign research institutions. The WHO Beijing office apologized to me personally twice as China's chief veterinarian. Who's our chief veterinarian? The hell are we doing? Says China's chief veterinarian of the WHO representative, which is who? His attitude was very sincere and I was deeply moved, said China's chief veterinarian. An Oklahoma-based convenience store chain and Langston University have met to resolve differences after one of the stores closed its doors to people heading home from Langston's late-night homecoming activities. On behalf of Langston University, I accept the company's apology and look forward to building a long-term partnership with Love's Country Stores, says president of the school. Love's has already shown a positive interest in Langston by employing our students. I believe the recent events will only aid in solidifying a great alliance. Jenny Love, the company's spokeswoman, said her father, Tom Love, the chairman and CEO, apologized for any miscommunication that may have occurred. That's what the apology is. We do not regret that we closed the store. The store did on advice of police. During homecoming weekend at the Langston, Oklahoma school, the Love store nearby, normally open 24 hours, closed for 3 hours to prevent possible acts of theft, vandalism, and unruly behavior by participants in homecoming activities. Nearby in Houston, a woman whose parents died in a Texas refinery explosion in 2005 settled a $1.2 billion lawsuit with oil giant BP this week. BP reached the undisclosed settlement with Eva Rowe and apologized for the Texas City refinery blast that killed 15 workers and injured about 170 others. "We are deeply sorry that she had to go through an ordeal like this. We truly regret her loss," says BP spokeswoman. A few weeks ago, Tony Blair found the time to write to Charlie Walduck and congratulating him on losing 30 stone in weight. I'm sure our British listeners know exactly how much that is. It's a lot of weight. But the Prime Minister apparently is too busy to do the same for the grieving mother of a British soldier. "I was just absolutely gobsmacked and enraged that he would write to Charlie and not to us," says the mother. "I'm not taking away from Charlie or his achievements. I just think Tony Blair has got his priorities completely wrong." Blair has apologized to the mother, who said the response was too little too late. Spokesman said the government was stressed to hear that she had not received the letter and what would be sent right away. Dateline Needles, California. You bring the pins. Pacific Gas and Electric has apologized for desecrating the sacred site of an American Indian tribe when it built a $15 million water treatment plant near Needles and pledged to remove it just as soon as another one could be built. This all seems to be a bit after the fact, but yes. California's biggest utility, quote, regrets the spiritual consequences to the tribe of building the plant at Tupac Maze in the Mojave Desert, says PG&E Chief Executive Thomas King during a ceremony. The apology was required, I see, under an agreement with the 1,100-member Fort Mojave tribe, which agreed to drop a lawsuit against PG&E and the state of California. The maze near Needles, yes, I said those words, the maze near Needles, is claimed by the tribe as part of its heritage. The pattern of pebble berms and furrows forms a series of lines that tribal ancients are believed to have used either as a place of purification or as a pathway for spirits to the afterlife. Much of the maze was destroyed by a railroad and a freeway, but about a third remains. It wasn't easy getting a corporation to understand, to recognize, and to accept this, said tribal chairwoman Nora McDowell. The water treatment plant set up shop in July of last year. It was built to deal with polluted groundwater under a natural gas compressor station. That utility dumped at least 190 million gallons of contaminated water into the ground from 1951 through 1969. So that's only 20 years, 198 million. So that would be almost 100 million gallons every decade. Authorities worried that the groundwater, which contained cancer-causing hexavalent chromium, could contaminate the Colorado River, the drinking water supply for 22 million people in Southern California and Arizona. Oh, what a web we weave. Dateline Colorado Springs, you know this already, less than 24 hours after being fired from the megachurch he founded, evangelical pastor Ted Haggard confessed to a lifelong sexual problem. In a letter read last Sunday to members of his church, Haggard said he's a deceiver and a liar. We knew that, babe. And he apologized to his congregation in the letter and asked for their forgiveness. There is a part of my life that is so repulsive and dark that I've been warring against it all of my adult life, he said. And a related story, by the way, in News of the Godly. Citing a lack of time, Focus on the Family founder James Dobson has withdrawn from the team overseeing counseling for Ted Haggard. In a statement, Dobson said, quote, emotionally and spiritually, I wanted to be of help, but the reality is I don't have the time to devote such a critical responsibility, unquote. Back to the apologies. Dateline Mexico City, a Spanish-language TV network, apologized to Mexican President Vicente Fox after airing offhand comments made by Fox about his pending departure from office. Telemundo understands that the broadcast of these comments could be construed as inappropriate and may have been taken out of context, said the Florida-based network. Telemundo regrets any offense that the airing of these comments may have caused in Mexico. What did he say? Now I speak freely. I can say whatever nonsense. It doesn't matter now. Now it's the end. I'm leaving, he said during pleasantries exchanged with a reporter. Apologizing for that. Search engine giant Google has found itself in the unenviable position of having to apologize for accidentally helping distribute copies of a malicious file known as the Kama Sutra worm. It sent the worm out by mistake to subscribers of the Google video blog discussion list. Thousands of Palestinians buried 18 victims of an Israeli artillery strike amid gunfire and cries for revenge. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, keen to head off retaliation, promised Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas he was prepared to offer him a lot. Where is he? Oh, in Israel, Olmert apologized and offered to meet Abbas anytime, any place. He said the Israeli artillery barrage was caused by a technical failure, adding, I'm very uncomfortable with this event, and I'm very distressed. A lot. At the corner of Wilshire? No, not that lot. And finally, on the subject of Ted Haggard and the Focus on the Family, a statement about by a Focus on the Family official this week about Ted Haggard's spiritual restoration treatment has angered at least one person. The article written by the Associated Press quotes Focus on the Family, saying those who fail the restoration process, the one that Haggard is going through now, will end up selling cars and shoes. A local car salesman in the Denver area feels the profession has been insulted. person in Focus on the Family, H.B. London, Vice President for Church and Clergy at Focus, says many people fail the process that Haggard's going through now, the spiritual restoration. Only a few make it through. Those who fail end up selling cars or shoes or something and being miserable and angry the rest of their lives, says Carl Salesman. Norm Farrell, I think there are a lot of people who make an honest living and feel the same way I do. This is not who I am. It's what I do for a living. London did issue a statement, quote, I offer my sincerest apologies for not being clear in my comments. My only point was that for someone called to the pastorate, having to earn a living doing anything else is often an unfulfilling experience, unquote. Yeah, well, we know what was fulfilling to Ted Haggard. And it wasn't selling cars. Ladies and gentlemen, the Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And you know that one of the big news events of the week was the exit of Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld. In the past, Vice President Cheney has resisted proposals to dump Rumsfeld, according to the Bob Woodward book. White House officials said they don't know whether he did so again this time. Cheney's spokeswoman said the vice president doesn't discuss the advice given to the president. Bush was already thinking about firing Rumsfeld when he met with reporters, but by his own account at his news conference this Wednesday, he decided to mislead them to preserve the secret. So we now have President Bush admitting that he misled reporters. You know, it's good progress. There's an upside and a downside to Rumsfeld, says one retired four-star general who had been close to him and who spoke on condition of anonymity because Rumsfeld's free to hit people. Quote, the upside is that he came to the job with a valid vision of the need for and ideas about how to transform the military and make it more suitable for the new century, says this retired four-star general. The downside is that he muddled the war so badly that nobody is ever going to remember the upside. So we don't know what Cheney's reaction was to the idea that Rumsfeld was going to be asked to leave. At least we don't know if you look above ground.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history. Dick Cheney, Confidential. Maybe it was just the fact that the Navy team running the secure undisclosed location had the temperature turned way down to keep the wine in good shape. Since the secure undisclosed wine cooler was out at Hampton Roads for repair, whatever the reason, one can never eliminate the possibility of natural weather variability. It got a lot colder this week. Maybe it was because the wheels came off Carl Rove's operation. I guess Turd Blossom, as the constituent-in-chief calls him, just lost his genius pin. But hey, maybe even Einstein had a bad year. I've never been happier not to be president than this week, when the guy wearing that particular suit had to go from saying the Democrats would help the terrorists to saying he'd love to work with the Democrat leadership faster than you can say, eat balls here. That didn't mean I didn't have an unpleasant feast set before me as well. I can't be sure, never having shot one before, but it sure tasted suspiciously like crow. Lynn was busy packing some belongings for the secure undisclosed vacation home out at the Eastern Shore, and I was cleaning my shotgun, preparatory for a little post-election duck hunting. After the meltdown of Carl Noble, I had a hunger to see somebody get their ducks in a row. Into this charming, secure, undisclosed domestic picture stepped my old boss, delivering news that could give a cannibal heartburn. Wednesday morning, 8:17 a.m. You know something, Lynn? I think this post-election period might be a very propitious time to make the paperback deal for your last novel. We still have... Well, look who the Naval Security Detachment just dragged in.
Hello, stranger.
Mr. Secretary, it's a little early in the morning after Election Day for you to be making subterranean drop-ins.
Well, a little early for you to be up as well.
Oh, he stayed up all night watching returns and cleaning his gun.
Well, Sir Dick, our friend Junior has just gotten off the reservation. A little election defeat has just turned his resolve into resolve-a-slim.
Don, I haven't seen you look this pale since Colin Powell started writing his memoirs.
Well, I just had a call from the genius inviting me over to the mansion for a meeting with Junior.
Operation stay almost the same course?
Operation Rumsfeldectomy. I'm going to be asked to agree to be asked to resign.
Donnie, don't peddle horse poop to the jockey. Nobody's asking you to leave. I never would have said a week ago that we're going full speed ahead, win or lose, if I didn't have ironclad assurances that Junior wasn't going to jump the fence just because we lost a couple of houses of Congress.
Well, they're the only houses of Congress.
Point taken, but this is enough to make me set my pacemaker to turbo. What do these people think they're doing?
They think they're throwing me to the wolves. They're treating the wolves the way the wolves would treat the terrorists. They think the wolves will be satisfied. They don't know the wolves. The wolves would just get hungrier.
Well, I mean, who else are they going to throw at them?
It wouldn't be something I know to be outside the parameters of the possible for them to come asking you to resign before the end of your term for the good of the party.
I got news for them. And you. I wasn't appointed to this job. I chose myself. And I got myself as elected as anybody around here.
No, I'm just saying this guy who first walked you over to the dark side. This election wasn't won by the Democrats. It was won by the 41s. And they're getting their revenge served colder than a general's pizzle.
How done is this deal?
Fork sticking out of me. All tines in and accounted for.
Damn it, Donnie. It stinks worse than Navy cabbage. Mm. Let me get on the phone and give Boy Genius a...
Everything's changed, Dick. The 41s are running the war account. All the locks have been changed. Our keys don't work anymore. Just an hour ago, I tried to get General Pace on a secure teleconference. All that came up on the screen was today's weather.
In Baghdad?
Everywhere but.
Donnie, one thing I learned from you on the Gerald Ford account is that just because a couple of branches of government try to stand in your way is no reason you can't accomplish great things for your country. I haven't played rough with Junior. Maybe it's time.
Maybe it's too late. Look, Richard, this is probably a good thing. If I'm out of office, I'm not such good subpoena bait.
All right, let's play that one out. Who's replacing you?
Bob Gates. Yeah.
He couldn't be more of a 41 if his name was Barbara.
Well, all I know is your days of playing on offense are over.
Maybe so, Donnie. But where I come from, defense can be a bitch.
Wyoming?
Texas.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, Lynn, I guess I'll see you out at the shore.
Donnie, Junior may think he's got the keys to the car, but he's about to find out there's a distributor cap that's missing in action. I know you're not a gambling man, but here's a tip.
All right.
Never bet against your own protege. One big difference between Donnie the Rum and me, he might have commanded the greatest military force in history, but I could actually invite Junior out for a duck hunt. End a partial diary for the beginning of November 2006. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confident. Thank you.
aching in my heart, in my pockets full of sand. I'm a long, long way from home, and I miss my loved one so. In the early morning rain, with no place to go. Out on runway number 9, big 707 set to go. And I'm stuck here on the ground, where the cold wind blows. That old liquor tasted good, and the women all were fair. Well, there she goes, my friend. She's a ruin now at last. Engine roar, see the silver bird on high. She's away and westward bound. High above the clouds she'll fly, where the morning rain don't fall and the sun always shines. She'll be flying over my home in about 3 hours' time. It's got me down. It's no earthly good to me. And I'm stuck here on the ground, as cold and drunk as I can be. You can't jump a jet plane like you can a freight train. So I'd best be on my way in the early morning. I'd best be on my way in the early morning rain.
Ladies and gentlemen, the British Advertising Standards Authority has been, this is also news from outside the bubble, missed earlier in the broadcast, has been inundated with complaints that Christmas ad campaigns are starting too early. We need an agency like that that can field those complaints. And that an ad suggesting that Santa may not be real has also caused a barrage of complaints. A number of festive-themed ad campaigns rolled out almost 2 months before Christmas. Several complaints labeled the campaigns offensive and misleading for launching so early, and say that they are socially irresponsible because of the financial pressures that Christmas brings to families. Isn't that quaint? Launching the ad campaign so early, the complainants argue, serves to intensify and prolong the pressure. Other complaints center on the fact that the advertising assault represents an over-commercialization of what is meant to be a religious festival. Really? Is that Bill O'Reilly's? Must have filed a complaint. The Christmas ad for Argos, I don't know what Argos is, received 15 complaints from parents because it conveys the concept to children that Santa may not be real and that it is parents who actually buy children's presents. Complainants believe the ad is taking away the innocence of those children who still believe in Santa. Aw. What about the innocence of children who still believe in the Iraq War? What can we do for them? And by children, I mean grown-ups. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it on your computer at kcrw.com and harryshearer.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com, as well as being on the air on the Mighty 104 in Berlin. And it would be just like redefining winning downward further if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, uh-huh. How about this? Victory means that Iraq still has a Q in its name. I think that's the kind of victory we can get bipartisan agreement on, don't you? The email address for this broadcast, if you do or don't, is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. This one's for Victor.